What's happening, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 64 of Bob. Today, I had the pleasure of speaking with Chris Holm, and we had him on as a guest, as we've always put out for anybody who would like to become on as a guest. Please reach out. We do have guests. Trust me, we'd love to have you on and talk about whatever. Chris has got his own show, which you guys can check out. I'll make sure I have a link to his podcast in the description. You can slide down there. It should be To Conspire a Theory. If I got the name wrong, I apologize, but I'm almost dead positive that it is. But there'll be a link, so just slide down just a little bit right there, and you can click on that and check him out. Also, he's an amazing artist. I know we didn't get to talk a whole lot about it, but if you, again, go on to our YouTube, that's where you're going to want to go. Guys, I've been telling you for the last couple episodes, we've been putting every single episode we go live with on there. As a matter of fact, we were like 6 weeks back on episodes. I just did a bunch of them in one night, putting them all out and getting them edited. So, but if you've been on our YouTube, you'd been seeing these as they were coming out, because they're right there, and you have people interacting as well. You can be part of that. So please feel free to follow up that way with us, as well as our Facebook group. Again, guys, you know the deal. Slide down. Any and every way to stay in touch with us is going to be right there linked for you. I would say the best way is probably our Facebook group as of right now, until it gets shut down one day. But that is the best way to hang out with everybody in the community that we have. And without much more to add on that, oh yeah, and I have mentioned this, it hasn't happened yet, but it will be this Saturday, because today's the 15th, so coming up this coming Saturday in like 4 days here, I will be going live for the first time on the weekends over there as Big Willie on the UFO Garage Podcast. And we'll be having a special guest. I don't want to mention who it is just yet, but you can check me out there if you'd like, if you want to just stick to strictly paranormal UFO. Well, you know, it's UFO Garage Podcast, right? So it's the UFOs, aliens, and all things weird. So not a whole lot of political stuff over there. It comes up every once in a while, but not nearly as much as we get involved with it. So if that's more your vibe, come check it out over there and hang out with me. Hang out with them. You guys should have checked them out already anyways. Also, check out our boys over at What If Tomorrow Podcast Group. Or actually Media. Sorry, What If Tomorrow Podcast Media, I believe. Is that the updated version? Anyways, you guys know. Mark and Phil, we got them over there as well. You guys should check them out. They're absolutely killing it, and they're always keeping me on my toes as far as trying to be prepared, especially in this day and age and what we have going on. You guys, just come on. It's better to be prepared than to end up in a situation where, darn it, I wish I had gotten something together. So enough about all that. You guys, I hope you have fun. I hope you enjoyed this episode. We discussed quite a few things, some of his experiences, as well as just his ability for art and cryptids and some of the other the unique things that way. And we did get into a little bit of the pop culture idea and political spectrum on the effects in the community of those that are in art, as well as comic books. So enough of me rambling, guys. Let's get this music queued up and let's go. What's happening, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 64 of Bob. Today it's just going to be me again without Micah, unfortunately, but that's the way she goes sometimes, and I promise he'll be back next week here, and we'll be continuing on with the Oklahoma bombing and all that jazz. But today we have with us Chris Holm, and Chris, I've actually known you. We have never really gotten on and conversed like we're going to do today, but we've messaged here and there on Facebook, and obviously with comments and stuff through the UFO Garage, I feel like is really how we met. So I'm kind of excited to be able to do this. I always enjoy having these conversations, and I know we don't have a set path exactly where we're going to go today. And I kind of like that, because you never know what's going to come up, and I just enjoy the raw nature of a conversation taking place. So first of all, thank you for making the time today to come on and hang out with myself, and welcome to the show. And please, let's right off the bat, we'll make sure we can let people know where they can find you and some of your amazing art that you do. You really are a very talented artist. Welcome, and let's let people know where they can find you.
Yeah, sure. You can easily find me at Conspire Theory Podcast. Just look for it in any search engine or podcasting app. You can find me on Instagram at Conspire Theory. Just put underscore between all the words, Conspire a Theory. And I'm also on Twitter, but you know, you could find me there at Conspire Theory, but of course Twitter is one of those, enter at your own risk. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much where I'm at.
Perfect.
I'm and also only, have Yeah, I was a little bit. You'll see me bouncing around in the Facebook group. So if you go to the Bob Facebook groups, usually the most snarkiest, most entertaining hot takes. Those are my posts. But aside from that, yeah, I'm usually just bouncing around. I was really looking forward to coming on the show, you know, taking on Mr. Smile Talker with the sunny disposition and his brother, the black-pilled Arsenal poster. You know, it was really something I was definitely looking forward to. But I'm pretty glad that you and me can actually sit down and chit chat, because I totally get that Micah's out there busy and working the third shift and stuff. I've done that stuff as well, and I totally get it.
Yeah, it's always interesting, and it can be a bit frustrating at times, you know, for both of us trying to balance it all out. But everybody's going through it. That's life, right? We can always say we can't control what's going on, just how we respond to it. So we're making it work the best we can, and but that's what we appreciate. Mainly what we're doing today is that, you know, like we said, you and I were briefly chatting before we got started, saying that one of the big things, what we founded the show on, was the idea of freedom of speech and people being able to. I really loved, to your point, what you brought up about having those, maybe what come off as two opposing views, separate point of views, and then those coming together and having a conversation. Those are the, to me, when I listen to people have a conversation, sure, it's cool if people have the exact same opinion. It's that, like, just echo chamber and everybody's just, you know, agreeing. But you get the most out of the conversations when somebody says something and then that point's challenged. And then there's this flow of reaffirming, and you're watching as it's taking place, like people either reinforcing their positions or realizing that, okay, maybe my position isn't what I thought it was. And to me, those are always the most beneficial conversations to at least listen to, and I think have as well. I mean, no matter the subject, in my opinion, but that doesn't always happen.
I love how you just enter in with the very topic that I asked you not to talk about, because it's going to send me on a freaking rant. 100%. And it's like, don't touch this thing because it's a hot button issue with me. That's and then it's true. Like, hey, the first thing, let's talk about this. As far as the overall basis of what it is that I'm getting at is, in this effort under the guise of keeping everyone safe and protected, we're also not challenging ourselves and people. The art of debate is gone. Some people can say that it pretty much ended in the Reagan era when he took out the fairness doctrine, which is where that's when mainstream media was like in, you know, 45 minutes and then sound bites and 20 minute commercial breaks and stuff like that, where you had to give equal time to an opposing view. When that was dropped, all of a sudden, it's like everything was just, you know, whatever the heck it is that we can throw at the wall, and no one had to feel or be challenged. And for some reason, pop culture-wise, we sort of taken that into the online stuff, which, you know, like it or not, online is the new thing where everybody's going to, because it's the easiest thing to access and to take to. And what we're seeing now is the old school media trying so hard in a death grip to hang on to relevancy. Mm-hmm. And we still look to them for, you know, to be our official curated sources, even though they're wrong, like several times. And we can point it out several times with, you know, current events and such, but it's not, you know, the details. It's the fact that they were acting with a specific agenda that was rather, you know, underhanded. And the thing is, they seem to have this grip on relevancy. I mean, just go to your YouTube homepage. The first two rows are whatever YouTube wants you to see, which is usually just like, hey, we're putting this stuff out so that way, you know, we look good. We think we look good to the most vile people on Twitter, so that way they're placated and they won't come after us. And then the second two rows are just network feeds. And it's like, the thing is, people come to YouTube to get away from the freaking networks. They come to just get the curated content that they want specifically from the trusted sources that they prefer, which is usually, you know, dumbass McDumdum and his wild take on the anime, on whatever Dragon Ball Z that he's looking for, you know. And if we do get the news, we're going to get it like usually rehashed from our favorite commentators and stuff like that, you know. I mean, what I used to do is I used to, you know, back in the early cable era, I used to listen to my news rehashed through Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. you know, because the regular news feed was so asinine. And I remember the day when, in my opinion, news media died, is when Sam Donaldson chimed in and interrupted an episode of Friends to tell us that there's no update on the OJ trial. He's basically calling in to say, I'm the first to cut in to this content that you're viewing to tell you that nothing has happened. You know, we're the first to tell you nothing has happened. And I get it, because I was totally obsessed with, I'm still obsessed with the OJ trial, because that OJ's my boy.
Okay.
You know, and it's just that sort of thing that I saw, that, you know, that's the first gasp that I witnessed of desperation. And I think that a lot of what the current situation that we're in now, I largely blame on, you know, large media, big media going for relevancy. And of course, they're the lapdogs of all the other big whatevers out there, be it big pharma or big oil or big petroleum or big, you know, big put kids on whatever. Because now it's like, now we have like the craze of putting kids on select hormones. Whereas when I was growing up, it was put all the kids on Ritalin, because every single kid is now hyperactive with ADD. Well, it was ADD when I was a kid. It didn't turn into the high definition when the ADHD. That didn't happen to like the next generation.
That's right.
But still, it's that whole point of you know, let's take something that's completely normal, and instead of, you know, dealing with it, no, we have to create a panic because we don't know what we're doing, or we know what we're doing, but we're not going to listen to the people that know what they're doing. Instead, we're going to panic and throw a pill at it, because somewhere someone makes money off of that pill.
And that's really, I think that's the key to it. I don't want to sum it up to like one thing, but a ton of what you said can point back to that one thing. It's back to money and following that money trail. And I get it. People have to make money, but man, sometimes the greed and lust of money just, it's taken not only individuals, but corporations and people's way of life and everything down some really dark paths just solely over that.
Yeah. And there are some people out there with genuine conditions that are sort of being, you know, they're being used as sort of like, or they're being used as doormats, because in my youth, I actually was one of those kids that needed to be put on Ritalin, because when I was, I didn't notice the difference when I was on Ritalin, but my parents did. My mom did. She noticed the difference. She said that, you know, that when Chris was on Ritalin, it was like a miracle drug. He would come in, do his homework, and then go play. Whereas when I wasn't on the Ritalin, I never got to my homework. I never did anything. I never really focused on anything. But, you know, somehow that stuff calmed me down and let me focus on whatever the hell it is that I was doing, you know. So for some people, you know, sometimes the stuff actually works. Sometimes all this stuff that we're getting into, it actually is beneficial for a few select people, but it's not a magic cure-all.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the weird part with any of that stuff is, like you're saying, every individual is unique. So based on their situation, who knows what works best for them. But I don't like the blanket stuff, you know, that gets tossed over. And that could be related. We could even relate that back to, say, the UFO topic or the paranormal topic or any of those, where, and I guess I'm definitely a youngster in any of this stuff. I've only been looking into it for like really 2 years, say the UFO topic, even though I've been interested in that stuff, but far as actually trying to take a serious look at it. So I'm a youngster. I will say that first and foremost, a lot of ignorance in it, but it is funny to see that there for a long time, there was a lot of blanket statements that the ones who'd been revered in the industry were basically setting the tone of what could be talked about. It was okay for this, but if we cross the line over here, that was off the table. You know, and a small example, that might be something like, you know, people would talk about maybe abductions and that'd be okay, but they couldn't talk about like ongoing, maybe some sort of a connection where they feel like they're having communication or downloads. You know, just small things like that, that seem to be important conversations that now I'm glad to see a lot of this is opening up. And it's weird though, because as it opens up, you know, where things open up and there's freedom, you're going to get maybe those that are just in it for whatever the attention or whatever might be going on. But I think something that Dave Scott said that was really stuck with me, and I've noticed this even for myself when you're listening to different individuals that say that they're channeling people or energy, You can tell, I feel like, when somebody's the real deal and when somebody's just faking it, you know, and that I'm sure that's even more so for experiencers. They can tell when an experiencer is a real experiencer or they're faking it. Now, it doesn't mean that the experience has to be the exact same as theirs, but there's the certain energy associated, I feel, with it. And I could be totally wrong about that. But
yeah, I've noticed there's something else, too, when all of the ETs happen to come down with Trump derangement syndrome, too. You know, all of our abduction, I mean, no matter who sets them, there's what I noticed is that there is a sort of 90 degree angle that everything seems to hit where we'll go up like it's just this steady ascension. I notice it in basically every single field. And then it takes a 90 degree turn into absolute absurdity. Hmm. Now, the definition of it is usually it you know, varies with miles. Like, say, for instance, the flat earther. Everything is, well, science, logic, up until you pass the firmament. Then when you pass the firmament, suddenly everything is God and spiritual and Bible and Jesus. You know, it's like this huge 90-degree turn. And I'm not bashing either, you know, logical, critical thinking or theological, you know, stuff. Because, you know, believe what you believe, you know, totally get into that and stuff, you know, no problem there. I just want to cover that base. But and in the UFO contactee field, basically everyone is like very, very coy and reserved about sharing their experiences. And I totally understand that. But once they get behind the mic and it starts to warm up, something takes over them. And then all of a sudden they're a guru and a messiah talking about, you know, oh, we have to save the planet and do all this stuff. And I have the answers to all your questions because the ETs talk to me. They speak to me because I'm special and I'm wonderful. And it's like, well, 5 minutes ago, you were like, you know, this stuff rarely ever happens to me. And I'm, you know, I'm scared and intimidated by it to now, you know, I am space brother number one type of thing.
We're number one.
Yeah. And it's a thing, you know, and I kind of understand it. And I think a lot of it has to do with attention, that once you get someone's attention, you don't want to let go of it. So it sort of escalates somehow. And it's very difficult to try to keep all your eggs in one basket. Cause I know that the Bigfoot crowd, they'll do that. Well, they'll selectively edit all their reports. You know, it's like, oh, there was a Bigfoot. And then I saw a UFO stream off. It's like, oh, then they just cross out the UFO stuff and say, okay, so you just saw a Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that there's also some of that in the UFO crowd. And I can understand wanting to focus on specific stuff because there is so much stuff out there that already I feel gets attention. For example, I was in a paranormal group. We specialized in UFOs and cryptids. Nice. And we like went to a local MUFON meeting, you know, just to show our support and to, you know, just be there. And my local MUFON chapters is really great and fantastic. You know, the local chapters are fantastic. I totally understand on the national level, people have criticisms about that. And I feel that there are valid, and that's another conversation. But the point being is that when we were in there, you know, afterwards, when everybody gets together and socialize, everybody was telling us about all these ghost hunting locales and all these, oh, you got to check out this haunted hotel, or you got to check out this haunted bridge and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, we don't do ghosts, you know, type of thing. And the thing is that there are already enough ghost hunting groups, you know, out there to cover that stuff, to warrant the attention that it needs. Mm. And we were just specializing specifically in cryptids, you know, stuff. I think around here, an ongoing case, I have to get back with my friends. They were talking about like something that came out that was like a Frisco crawler, except it was, you know, gigantic and had four limbs instead of the two. Really? And it's basically crawling. Someone saw it, you know, walk across a fence line or something. And I don't know the exact details of it, but you know, that's usually where a lot of the cases that I talk to come from, as well as there are, you know, other individuals and those who come to me and people that I speak to that are willing to come forward, you know, because, you know, I try to limit myself, you know, when I go to a place like MUFON or something like that, like I'm not there, you know, standing on the fence line like a ghoul waiting for someone weak to just so I can, you know, jump on them and exploit their story. Yeah. Everyone that I approach is usually after the meeting, you know, and it's on their own terms. And if they want to come forward, they're welcome. They're making the choice to come forward. It's not me coercing anyone. Because yeah. I know that there is some criticism about doing that out there.
Well, I respect that, though. But I think you're doing a great thing for is you're back to, again, I know that's what we said we were going to talk about, but back to the point of making someone, in some sense, kind of defend their, if you're going to make a claim, I don't expect someone to have all the answers, especially when you make a claim. Let's say you have an instance where you've been abducted. And I know that's, I would love to get into that because that's, you said that's more like your forte. So in abduction cases, sometimes there is, most of the time, not a lot of evidence, but there is getting to be some patterns with evidence. And so there might be a little bit, but that isn't going to be enough for everybody. So I get that. If someone says, here's basically the amount of evidence I have, take it or leave it, I have no problems with that. Like you said, it's when it gets that weird, like, all right, you're maybe now we're adding on a few more details. And I'm not trying to knock anybody for making money because I understand we all have to make money. We live in a system that requires that. So, but then it'll like new revelations will come out when a new book's coming out. There's, and again, I'm not trying to knock that because I understand you have to make money, but I don't think there's anything wrong with challenging somebody a little bit when they initially bring something out and just say, hey, here's what they said. And we have the legends, as it were, and I don't know your position on it, but you could say ones like Travis Walton, where his story's never really changed. You know, the guy's written, the books have been done and stuff's happened, but as far as his initial, what he said when things happened, it stayed the same. He's never
met him like at a convention, and okay. This was sort of a weird circumstance of events. So pretty much this was at like a Houston Paracon. And before that, a flood had come through and basically decimated the town, but they still had their event. And I think it was like 30 people showed up. And of course, Travis was one of the people. And I think also Terry Lovelace was there. He was there.
Yeah, great guy.
I got to talk to him before he got big, before his book published, when it was just a draft that he was passing around. And I regretted so much not interviewing him then and there. You know, at the time I had just gotten the first episode of my podcast out and I was still timid. But the point being is I pretty much had Travis Walton all to myself. And that was quite an experience, you know, and I got to really talk to him on the level about, you know, other topics as well. Mm-hmm. And with the UFO and experience stuff, he has so much more to say, but he's not coming forward with it because of how, you know, because he knows he can't prove it. And he knows that there's going to be, you know, heavy criticism and it's not going to add to the conversation. And I think he's like, he'll probably release it when he passes. And all I can say is I cannot wait for him to drop. Now, I'm just joking. But as far as I cannot wait until we finally get that. But the guy is so freaking spry that, you know, I'll probably drop before he does. And it's, you know, but that stuff is it's out there as far as, you know, other experiences that people are having. And I guess some people, they can go into that arena, whereas I can understand that he's limited to that because he wants to maintain that level of credibility. Yeah. And it's a very fine line as far as, you know, well, I experienced this, but it sounds so wacky that it's going to, you know, it's going to be rather incredible type of thing. So I can understand why some people are apprehensive about sharing everything. And the thing is, with the nature of the book, there is a process to releasing a book that you have to go through. And as much as I hate to say it, you know, you have to fill that 400, 300 pages. You need something in there. And I guess that's why we see a lot of whenever people do release a book and stuff, it's usually a rehash of old case files and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. Stuff that we've all seen before. Those of us who are already knee deep in it, but it's sort of, and then there's like a nugget of something new because it's very difficult to release, you know, a book on just one account.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think, are you still there, by the way? Did I cut you off?
I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
It stopped for a second. I was like, maybe he's just getting a drink. Perfect. No worries. I just wanted to make sure I didn't lose you. So, you know, like when we interviewed, we had the pleasure of getting to interview Terry Lovelace. And I had listened, I had read his, well, I work a lot, so I'm usually audio, but I had listened to his book twice. And It was funny because we were talking for a little while before we got started, and he was saying how much got cut out, you know, like out of that book. Even his original draft was, you know, the editor went through and was like, this isn't really necessary. Eliminated a lot of the stuff that we got to talk about what happened to him when he was a kid, you know? Yeah, there was a little bit in there, but it was just enough that I get it as a book. It gave you the bullet points and you moved on, right? But for some people, especially say different experiencers, that one little detail or nugget of truth, like that's, it's almost confirmation for them, not only to prove that perhaps that person's telling the truth, but they're confirming their own experience, I think, sometimes. And again, like I said, I'm not trying to knock anybody who's trying. You got to make money in this. We exist in a capitalistic kind of environment. It's how it works. But the idea that some people seem to embellish things, and there's always what you talked about. There's an agenda, and it's this way in everything. It's not just the UFO talks, anything, but there seems to be an agenda flow for a long time that's remained in power of the phenomenon or as a whole. And it could only go one way, you know, and now we're getting a lot more intertangled. Like you were talking about, like the Bigfoot research, I forget what the BFL, I think that's what they're called, how they were editing people's stories and stuff because we can't cross this. No, we're Bigfoot. Aliens aren't real, right? The people won't believe us if that's the case. And I'm starting to notice, and I kind of love it, but it's weird how it's all blending together. You're taking paranormal, you're taking dimensional, you're taking aliens, you're taking all this stuff, and you're kind of realizing that some of them seem to overlay a lot more. And that's where I just think a lot more at the end of the day, we just don't know. And for anybody to get up there and pretend they know, like with a certainty, I don't know. I mean, I think you're giving it your best shot, but you don't know. You know what I mean? None of us really know.
as far as trying to find a definitive truth or put pieces together, I've pretty much given up on that. I'm at the point now where I'm at, like, you know, if it's an interesting story, if it's an interesting account, and the person doesn't come off as insufferable, then I'll hear them out. I'll give them a talking to. I'll have them on my show. And this was a 3-part interview with a longtime experiencer, the Jack Carroll Memoirs. He just released his book, and that was probably one of my biggest and best shows because we went into detail of his experiences, and I actually sat down there and talked to him. And as we were talking, I was able to, you know, dig deep into his experiences and ask him questions about it. Now, I accept the possibility that, you know, there's a good chance that this entire abduction experience is just us being wrong about something, that maybe there are no aliens. Maybe we all are just suffering from sleep paralysis disorders and everything is just imagined and stuff like that. That's totally a possibility. I accept that we could be alone in the universe and all this and that and the other thing, but I still want to hear the cool stories. Yeah. You know, I still want to learn about the accounts and stuff. I mean, if there's a chance that someone's pulling the wool over my eyes, then okay. Yeah. I guess that was, then we'll put an asterisk there. Mm-hmm. As far as that account, like one of the things that I love to bring up is the Steve Romanek account.
Okay.
Where he probably had a large degree of genuine experiences, but he was so worked up in the allure of the community and being a superstar and all that stuff that I kind of felt like he indulged it a bit. And also the guys, you know, he's a bit off. He's a bit of a creepy guy from what I've seen of him. That's what I surmise from my observational stuff, is that the dude's a creep. And you can pretty much, and that's why I kind of believe that he was set up, because I don't believe he was smart enough to keep all his CP and a thumb drive on top of his desk. Yeah. He would have like kept it in a folder marked, "Don't look at this. It's kiddie porn," type of thing.
You're not the first person to say they didn't think he was smart enough to pull, you know, he's dumb enough to get caught that way and do something like that, but he took out 3 guys with a bike chain, you know, like.
Yeah, I remember that story about how he kung fu fought like three black ops, Rainbow Six guys, you know, and it's like, okay, there is a chance. Yeah, you know, maybe everyone is full of shit. And this is just a natural phenomenon that we simply don't understand because it's us coping with our environment. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be all in our head. And if that's the case, then, hey, that's fascinating as well. Let's learn about that and study that. But the thing is, as far as, you know, putting stuff into and assigning it a narrative and stuff like that, we don't know. I mean, there are some people who try to put in the unification theory that maybe all of the Fae encounters of old time lore were, you know, alien abductions, and maybe those are one and the same, that all these modern day aliens, maybe they are the modern representation of the Fae and stuff like that. I find that stuff fascinating. I'm like, let's take everything and throw as much against the wall and see what sticks and see what, you know, let's have an open conversation about all this stuff and let's debate it and stuff like that. And, you know, see how things weigh out. And I'm totally open to that.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess like, it's hard to say, cause we're one small picture, you know, like I only get to operate from my perspective, and I'm so close to the surface where I don't get to zoom out and get that perspective of what's going on across the board. The internet kind of helps us with that, or tries to, and that's the whole thing. But with podcasting and all this stuff that like yourself and I are doing, I love that. I truly feel that a lot of answers lie in the collective consciousness. And I know some people get really fired up about this statement, but the idea of that we're all little fractal pieces of the puzzle, and that's why it is important that we interview these different people. And one thing I love about what Joe and Ben do is they'll have anybody on. And sometimes, you know, I always tell people when they come on our show, I shouldn't get to tell you this backstage, but I just tell them, hey, I'm going to let you talk about whatever. And if you're clearly going off, like, here's the rope to hang yourself, right? I'm not going to sit there and unless you're going way like where we absolutely know I can just prove it wrong. If it's in regards to something I can't really absolutely prove wrong, I'm not going to try and stop you. And I love that Ben and Joe allow guys and people to just share their story, and it all works out, you know, whether that's just what that person needed to get off their chest or it's something that triggers something in somebody else. I kind of like that there's this new open, let's put it all up there and let's try and get an idea of it. But also what you hit on was a really important thing, which is that not to figure it out completely, more like we're just experiencing it. And so that sounds silly, and I know it sounds really like new age and all that stuff, but like just riding the waves of the universe. You know what I mean? Like, yes, I'm looking for answers, but I'm not trying to force anything. I'm just going with it and enjoying the experience. Cause I love this topic. I love all of them, all the kind of weird, strange stuff. And, I enjoy, like, especially let's say cryptids. Cryptid stories are so unbelievably no tangible evidence almost ever associated. It's almost 9 times out of 10, someone's a recount of a situation. And yet it's one of the most fascinating things, you know, because if people are making this stuff up, it's like, of all the things you could make up, you know, you're making up the most obscure, strange looking beings that you're seeing. And what's been your take on that, I guess? Because that's something, obviously, that you said your group kind of focused on. Have you noticed that in your experiences or research?
Yeah, that's definitely the cherry on top as far as what I'm interested in, is I really love learning about these characters of the paranormal, be they Bigfoot, or the Indrid Cold character, or Valiant Thor, or the Dog Man, and all of these other characters. I love learning about these characters. I'm really drawn to these characters. And that's what I kind of want to get at, is figuring out, learning more about these characters and fleshing them out and trying to figure them out and stuff like that. You know, because as far as the Bigfoot stuff like that, I really don't know what to make of it. Part of me is like, you know, well, maybe it is a thing, maybe it's not. I know that there are people who swear up and down, you know, and you know, they're bigger than me, so of course they're right. And it's the thing is like, you know, but when I'm one of those guys, I think it was it Melinda Leslie or Lori Fenton who said people don't want disclosure, they want confirmation. I'm one of those guys. Yeah. I want to see the body. I want to see the alien under glass. I want to see it type of thing, mm-hmm. you know, and I want to see the dog. I want to see the body. I want to see the Dog Man, the Bigfoot or whatever, you know, in its cage or in a enclosure or whatever. You know, I want that. And the thing is, if you're not going to give me that, then I'm probably, you know, then my you're not going to keep my attention, unfortunately. And I get that there are some people who like they try to do the, oh, I gotta live and let live and let them be in their environment, and it's like, okay, so you're just settling for just the experience and stuff like that. Okay, yeah. That's fine, but still, you know, I need something that I can hold on to, mm-hmm. type of thing. And I really don't think that's too much to ask for, you know?
No, I don't want to speak for him too much because he's obviously not here, but I don't think I'm wrong in saying it since he said it on the show before. It's definitely Micah's take on things. Now, don't get me wrong. He's becoming a lot. I mean, when we first started, aliens were none of that was on the table. Okay. Aliens, ghosts, none of it. And he's starting to come around a little more on at least entertaining the idea, but he is that same mindset. Like you said, unless I can see, feel, and touch it, why do I need to accept anything you're telling me now? And I know that some people think that is a very cynical point of view, or like, well, you're just out to just prove us all wrong. But we do need that in this kind of community. We do need that in anything, any topic that's taking place. Like we were talking about when we covered Skinwalker Ranch, how I would have never made Robert Bigelow's team because I'm that guy who, like, I would be excited to find this stuff. And he purposely was picking people to put on his team that were not open to these ideas because he wanted to have the most, like, you would probably be on the team. Micah would have been one of those guys because they're just like, it isn't real. And I'm here to prove that it isn't real. And, that's not where I'm at with things, but we do need that in this community. And I think when it's done respectfully and in the right manner, which I feel you've always done, and that is a good thing, because if we're all, like I said, out there just like patting each other on the back and yeah, and you're just firing each other up and yeah, is this and that. And, you know, we do need to be able to critically evaluate things. And that's really what it comes down is just a process. And there's going to be a head where you can neither disprove and I can neither prove. And then at those points, we've just got to agree to disagree.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That is just, it is what it is. It's,
I think that leaks into what we were talking about at the beginning of the show when it comes to this lack of debate, this whole, you know, freedom of speech, stuff like that, where people are just, no one wants to be challenged or debated or they just want to have their say, have it be accepted and absolute and then be praised for making it. Mm. It's like, they need to understand, like, especially science, since everyone is all, oh, you don't support the science, blah blah blah. It's like, well, a lot of the people saying that aren't even practicing the scientific method, which is everything needs to be challenged. Like, everything needs, like, you see a plane up in the air, right?
Yeah.
How does it stay up there? It stays up there because a bunch of people challenged each other, saying, you know, I can make this big thing fly. Okay, prove it. You know, let's scrutinize it. Let's make sure that everything can stay up, that everything can be sustained and done. I mean, planes aren't up in the air because, you know, because I said so. They're up in the air because so much of the science was scrutinized, cross-examined, peer-reviewed, challenged, and made sure that it was irrefutable, that it could sustain, and that way we could build something that could do that, that could, you know, that could take us, you know, to from San Antonio to Houston in 30 minutes instead of the 3-hour drive. And it's just, that's what we need. And the thing is that I understand where people are coming from, that they're afraid. They're really scared of cynical skeptics. And you can be, you know, critical, because one of the thing about critical thinking is you're not attacking the person. You're attacking the evidence and the idea or the proposal because you're making sure that it can sustain. It's not a personal attack, but because everyone, and with this identity bullshit, everyone is putting their identity into everything.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's like I really love chocolate milk. That's not my identity. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't like it, I don't give a fuck. That's more for me. The thing is that, you know, because we have these people who don't want to be challenged, and that seems to be where our culture is heading, is don't challenge me, I'm fragile. Mm. And they see that somehow as a position of strength because they use it to bully themselves into a position of authority with it. Because for some reason, the bigger, higher ups are so deathly afraid of a psychotic Twitter mob of people who don't spend money or really support anything. They just want to tear shit down. But anyways, is that because we're so afraid of offending someone, because the second we do that, we have a target on our back. Mm. And with all that stuff, it's like, we can't have stuff, you know, challenged anymore. And I know that there are skeptics out there who are complete and total assholes about it.
Yeah.
And I hate those guys too. Mm. But the thing is that you know, as far as a skeptic, you can, you know, cross-examine and be critical and stuff, and it is necessary to make a better argument, to make a better theory and a better proposal, a better hypothesis. I mean, I've shown you some of my artwork, right?
Yeah.
I'm good. I'm a very good artist. I'm not the best there is. I'm not the greatest. But the point being, I would not have gotten as good as I would have gotten if I did not take criticism, if I did not take it and process it and grow and improve from it. And that's one of the things that people aren't understanding, is that, you know, sometimes your theory may not be absolute. There might be holes in it. There might be holes in your logic. And if you want it to grow and be absolute, you have to set it out there to be challenged, to be scrutinized, to be cross-examined, to be peer-reviewed. And that's how you improve. And because people don't want to do that, it makes me, you know, really, really, what's a nice way of saying I hate them? It makes me really, 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 it makes me really feel, you know, awful for them, like almost pity them in a cynical way, because you're choosing to stick yourself in the mud. You're choosing to remain stagnant.
Yeah.
And you're hiding behind, oh, I'm so fragile. You're hiding behind politics instead of using actual whatever it is that you need merit to actually make your argument or stance absolute.
Yeah.
It's like you're winning by not playing instead of, you know, winning by actually defeating the other team or defeating the obstacle of the game, the purpose of the game. You're not. And that is, you know, for someone who grew up in that environment where I had to be challenged on everything, I had to be cross-examined on everything. Otherwise I didn't grow. And the thing is, you know, and I know that people want to go, oh, well, that's easy for a privileged white person to say. You know, it's like, well, I'm only half white, so that doesn't count. Also, the thing is that, you know, I mean, not everyone had a privileged upbringing. I mean, I was never, you know, the most charming, delightful person in the class. I was always a person in the back. But even then, I got the brunt of it because, you know, and that sort of steeled me into a sort of a more, you know, open-ended person. And I do sort of approach other people like that. And because of that, you know, some people find me a bit too confrontational for them. And, you know, I'm like, okay, that's fine. You know, I can accept that. But the thing is, any type of stance I make, you know, I definitely want it. I mean, if it's going to be challenged, it's going to be challenged. I'm not going to try to, you know, stick anything out and say, oh, I'm being attacked or whatever. You know, because if a personal attack is coming in, I can deal with that.
Yeah.
But as far as, you know, theories and stuff out there, which I really don't have much of any, it's like I'm at the point where I'm just gathering everything and just trying to take a look at everything.
Yeah.
And see where everything lies and stuff like that. That those are my interests.
And I think you said a couple of things that were really great and all of that, which is, you know, like the scientific method, you know, the trial by fire. It's literally someone, you know, proposes an idea, they have a hypothesis and they put it forth, and the rest of the scientific community tries to destroy it, like using the same method. It has to be the same, you know, basis of how they got to that conclusion. And if they can't come to that conclusion, well, then it gets thrown out. It's failed. But if it does, then okay, then it passes and then becomes a theory. But they're not attacking that scientist themselves. They're not saying, how dare you? You know what I mean? But sometimes a scientist can really risk scrutiny in proposing an idea that challenges the current perspective on things. And so they can really rock the boat. And you have to be willing to rock the boat once in a while for us to progress. Because I do think the most important thing you said, which is that if we're so afraid to offend anybody, then how are we going to grow? You know, I'm not here to, I being a father and stuff, I'm not here to hurt my kids whatsoever, but we do challenge them to be better. You know what I mean? When things are going on, when they're falling down and they're learning how to walk and all that stuff, and most of the time they have the motivation to want to, but every once in a while you'll get one that just doesn't really want to, and you're constantly challenging them. You're picking them up. No, stand on your own feet.
And when you were a kid, you played sports, right?
Yeah, backyard stuff.
Yeah, yeah. When you were in Pee Wee baseball or Pee Wee basketball, I'll just use that as an example. Mm-hmm. What made you feel better? Being told that you're wonderful for just showing up, or going up and actually slam dunking the basketball and winning the game? What made you feel better?
That's no question. Yeah, for anybody who's actually competed and you finally win something, even if you've lost for a long time. Yeah, when you contribute and you know you contributed.
Yeah,
kids are smart. They know the difference.
Yeah, because you know that you've done something great and you worked hard for it. You practiced for it. And that type of thing is that, yeah, I get not everything is a competition. But at the end, you know, it's like having a sort of, you know, trying to enter into competitive arenas, mm-hmm. and try to dismantle them because it's like, well, I'm always marginalized or I'm never set up that I can never win. That's a defeatist mindset. You know, it's like you're already setting yourself up to be defeated and you're not even trying. And that's worse than at least trying and losing, because even the people who are out there and lose, they won't lose all the time. You know, you can only lose like once a game. that's the thing is that, but the competition is still there and you can still go out there and face the challenges and win eventually. You know, if you practice, if you're good enough, if you learn the game and learn how to best do it type of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's that sort of competitiveness that's sort of like, you know, cause I was never good at sports. I always got dunked on and all that stuff, but I still, you know, now as an adult, I definitely respect the art of competition.
Yeah. Yeah. It brings, I mean, it really does breed out the best in people, far as, and I'm, without getting into my own little like theories and ideas on it, but if we just respect every way that we've been taught history, so with everything in regards to the space race and all that stuff, that was solely a competition flexing thing on one of that. It was us and Russia going, we're better than you, and no, we're better than you. And honestly, Russia kicked our butt all the way to the moon. I mean, they were ahead of us on every step until somehow we got to the moon before them, but... Here or there on that, far as I know, a lot of people have a lot of opinions that way. But the point being, like you're saying, the idea of competition bringing out the best, even in the Olympic athletics. And when this year, I can't remember the name of the Australian swimmer, but she finally caught our swimmer, Lockie. What was her first name? I can't remember her first name. But point being, she'd been chasing her for like two decades. I'm sorry, not two decades, a decade. And they both said afterwards, and they were very polite, and they're, you know, friendly enough. But she had said, Lockie, our swimmer, was saying that she was letting her know that, like, you've pushed me. Even though you've been trying to catch me, you trying to catch me is what's pushed me to want to be better. And I, not to get all like into the science thing, but one of the most annoying pictures that I see out there that I just, I'm a pretty nice guy usually. Like, I don't want to like argue with people, but I will argue logic. And when they wear these giant face masks or wear signs and have stickers that say the science is settled, sometimes I'm like, it's not, it is settled to the understanding that we have currently. We don't know. We've thought at every single turn of the century that the science was settled. And I just,
yeah, that's not how science works
at all. It's that's not how science works,
but because it's not politically expedient at the, at the moment, you know, that's where the pressure is. And it's all social pressure too. And it's backed by the big media, big internet media, the big conglomerates, they're pushing it too, because they're in that boat as well. And that leads into the, we see it most apparent in the politics.
Yeah.
And in the current, you know, lockdown situations, that's where we see it the most, but I'm pretty sure it's everywhere and in every community. Mm-hmm. And that's what terrifies me. You know, when I see these young people coming in, is that I'm afraid that they're going to bring that into the fold with them, because as a security blanket, because that's all they know.
Yeah, they're just being raised in it. I mean, it's, I don't even say it's not even, they're not even being indoctrinated at this point. I mean, they are in a sense, but it's just, it's not like they had a moment where they had an option to say, hey, one way or the other. It's just, this is okay, this is just a small example. Okay, this is just, my wife and I were just talking about this before we came down. This is a really small example, and I'm not trying to make a political statement at all, but all your, when you went to school, when they told you the statement, sit Indian style, what did that mean to you?
That meant like sit down cross-legged with your legs crossed on the front.
I've always known as that too, right? But it is not allowed to be called that. Liam, like our son, was like, what? And we were like, you know, we were talking about sitting Indian style. And he was like, that's called sitting pretzel style. And we were like, what? He's like, yeah, that's pretzel style. And I was like, again, it doesn't really matter, but it's just funny to see how everything is so politically charged
down to like he's in kindergarten and we're talking about the way he's sitting. And again, it's neither here nor there, but it's funny to see how, like, for him, he doesn't, until I tell him about that, he's never going to know. It doesn't, it's not even in his world, you know?
Yeah. I've even heard, like, crisscross applesauce. That's another one.
I had heard that one a little bit, but, and it's just funny that people get, and I'm guilty of this too. I am, because I'm sensitive to people's feelings sometimes, for sure. And even though I love challenging, I love the idea of, like, I love listening. My pastime joy right now has been listening to flat earth debates, like good ones. I'm not talking like, and I still listen to people who just do their own thing, but I'm talking about getting like, you know, people that are really experts in their fields and then listening to those debates, because it gets really good. When two people have researched their subject, you could say, like, say in your instance, people say you're just a cynical critic. Well, to be that, if you've done your homework, you've at least read on this. You've spent some serious time in it and you've really looked into it to give an educated opinion on it. And if you haven't, they're going to call you out pretty fast, because the other person's pretty dedicated to what they're doing. And I just love when two people have taken time to really look at something and come together and talk about it, even if they opposing views, or if they've actually looked at it, because you can tell, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I love my globes. I do. I really, I guess that makes me a globetard, but of course I get put into the bucket of flat earther because I hear them out. I let them speak. And because of that, that's, you know, a cardinal sin, you know, letting someone have a voice on my platform and come and talk to me somehow makes me, you know, a bad guy by association. But either way, I do understand the foundation of the argument being that the only source of verification for anything is via the government, via NASA. Yeah. They're the only absolute sources on any kind of answer as far as the global question. And the thing is, we're not allowed to challenge them and stuff like that, or get our own. And the way to get our own evidence is prohibitively expensive, or prohibitively outside the means of a regular person just asking a question. So I understand the frustration, and I do feel that there is, you know, there's nothing wrong with asking those questions. And the people who do come up to answer it are usually, you know, they're the ones that are the most prominent are usually the biggest cynical assholes. And they're just absolute jerks about it. And it's done purposefully to punch down at you, to sort of shame them, that if you feel this way or if you ask these sort of questions, you're supposed to be shamed about it.
Yeah.
Instead of, well, let's have a grown-up conversation about it and look at the evidence together and ask questions and figure it out. So that way there is no more question. But we can't do that because I got to stand on my hill and make fun of the dumb kid.
And that's what that's the part that bothers. So what even got me into the, because initially, first of all, I don't want to use the term outlandish necessarily, but when you first hear the term you could say it's an outlandish claim. The first time you heard somebody say the earth's flat, it's always intriguing to me. If somebody gives me something that's like, I've just never heard that before, it always, no matter how crazy it is, I'm like, well, wait a second, what's your psychology on it? Why do you, like, I want to know why they have this position. And with the flat earth thing, same thing. I wanted to at least hear him out. I'm like, I got to hear a solid argument, because I was trying to find stuff and like everything I was finding was like, these guys, like, stuff, it's neither here nor there. It works on both flat or globe, you know, or heliocentric map, however you want to word it. And I finally said, okay, well, what about, I'm just trying to look them up. And it was the Flat Earth Society thing. Well, then I got looking into it and I found out that the Flat Earth Society, at least according to those that are really into, some educated ones I found that, you know, were mathematicians or astrophysicists and stuff, as a career, that went out to set out to prove it wrong, who've now become full-time flat earthers, as it were. From listening to them, finding out that Flat Earth Society website, the main one that everybody gets routed to through Google, that it's a psyops, basically. It's purposely set up to be so dumb that the average Joe can look at it for 5 minutes and go, these guys are a bunch of idiots, and leave. When I found that out, that was my first, like, little red flag. I'm not saying I'm a flat earther, but it was enough for me to be like, well, now I want to kind of find out why, because who would do that?
I've also heard that the Flat Earth Society was also, another theory that I heard was that it was an exercise in, it was a debating tool. It was a tool used to sharpen debate, that you could purposely make a rather absurd comment. And if you make it good enough with enough compassion or at least enough good merit or backing behind it, that you could argue any absurd idea just based on the merit of having great debate skills. That's sort of what that was, that it was an exercise, that it was a debating exercise for people to sharpen their skills. So that way they could learn how to best cite their sources, how to best present their evidence, how to best do this, that, and the other thing. That's another theory that I heard, as far as it being a deliberate. Maybe now I can understand where some people would see it as a deliberate psyop, because now everything is a psyop. You know, Aunt Jemima is a psyop. You know, it's this sort of thing, and it's just rather the most absurd, you know, like we were saying, you know, the most absurd things are now psyops, and it's rather ridiculous now. And sometimes, you know, how does the saying go? Incompetence is the best breeding ground for conspiracy theory. Mm-hmm. That there could be just a series of incompetence that leads to a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. Because we all ask, well, because so many times we'll ask the question, how could this have happened?
Yeah.
You know, and we can't believe that so many people could, you know, either willingly or unwillingly have been at fault to allow, you know, event A to occur. So, of course, we throw a conspiracy behind it because, well, that's the only way. It's not that people are fallible. It's not that, you know, that a series of events could have happened with a series of fallible people that had led to this sort of unbelievable conclusion type of thing. And you can apply that to everything, be it the Twin Towers, the Kennedy, the Martin Luther, the Junior King, all this stuff. You could throw all that stuff to anything, that it could have been, you know, just a series of incompetent people not doing their job that led to what is now the grandest conspiracy of all.
Yeah. And, you know, even with that one, like with the flat earth stuff, because I've gotten a lot of crap over it, because for the last year I've given it the option, like you're saying, I've listened to people, one or two people in my life that were actual flat earthers, and wanted to just sit down with them and like, hey, let me just tell me your position and listen and read on some stuff. And I made a statement the other day at work to somebody, and they were like, seemed really taken back by it. And all I said to him was, I said, he says, were you trying to tell me you're a flat earther? And I said, no, I'm just saying that I recognize for myself where I'm at, that I am not educated enough. I have too much ignorance to prove 100% one way or the other, whether it definitely is or isn't. And I said, and so for me, I can't give a fair statement. That's why I'm trying to go to educated people that you know, are much, much more intelligent than me and work on this stuff to see if they have an answer. Because I recognize, like you're saying, because of my ignorance, I could very easily fall into that. Because I don't understand, I don't want to just say that. So I'll just go with it. Well, we're just being tricked, and it's a long, you know, play that they've been setting up.
And another thing that I've seen is also academic goalposts being moved. They're constantly being moved, and it rather infuriates me, because before it was, you get high enough, you'll see the curvature of the earth, and then it's like, well, no, you're not going to see the curvature of the earth at the height of a plane, because the plane windows are bowed, so that creates a fisheye lens. And all of the guy who did the Red Bull jump, well, he was using a fisheye lens, so that created an artificial curve, so he wasn't high enough to see. And it's like, well, then how freaking high are we supposed to get to be able to see the curve? And then it's like, well, in order to get to that height, you'd have to like be like past Jeff. You have to be Jeff Bezos to make that height.
I said something like, I was like 33,000 feet or something, or whatever the height was. It was a ridiculous number that none of our even normal airline planes or jets are.
Yeah, it basically, again, like I was saying, prohibitively expensive to the average person who just has a question.
Yep. And really quick, though, too, because I don't know how long I have you. I know I've already been going for about almost an hour. I would love to do two things. I know I'm shifting gears here kind of rapidly on you, but
I could give you a little bit more time.
Okay, perfect.
If we're going on a thing, I just got to get a glass of water.
Yeah, no problem. Go ahead and grab that. Yeah,
just give me a second.
Perfect. So if anybody who's listening to this right now, guys, on YouTube, if you are watching and you clicked on us through our Facebook page, we'd really greatly appreciate it if you'd come on over to our YouTube channel and subscribe. We are making a point every one of our episodes from here on forward going forward will be uploaded live to our YouTube channel, so you can join the conversation there. And we'll also share that to our Facebook group. And if you're just listening via podcast format, please go check it out. It's just Band of Bearded Brothers. You have the links in the show notes there. Click it, subscribe, and ring the bell, and that way it notifies you when we go live. We'd appreciate that. And then the more engagement we can get you guys with you guys in these kind of subjects, we love it. And then obviously you can always hop on the Facebook page group and share there and join the conversation. So, but I would love to, what we'd love to do here, once Chris sounds like he's getting set back up. Perfect. Yeah. I want to show your...
Good thing I didn't go pee.
No, you could have.
You could have heard that.
We can edit that out. No worries. When we're live, we'll just...
What did you do? I've seen you drinking a lot. Did you pee your pants?
What, this right here? No. Yeah. I'm drinking... I drink tea. I love drinking like raspberry. I had a bad bout for sure going through 2020 of... drinking too much.
There's not like another one out of the table that you're urinating in, and then you
I have a whole nother.
This tea is warm. It's lemonade.
I hang on to it, man. I can go quite a while usually. I think the longest I've gone was like 4.5 hours with a podcast. I think one time that we did.
Yeah, I guess we'll give it another 30 minutes and see where we're at. So
perfect.
I'm good for that. If you're good.
Yeah, I just wanted to share your art here, because if you're okay with kind of describing it, I'll pull it up on the screen, and then...
That's what it's there for.
Perfect. So I'm going to go here, and then it'll take a second, because for whatever reason it wasn't giving me. So is it actually bringing up the picture for itself? Perfect.
I see it.
So I wouldn't mind if you'd love to kind of describe to us, if you know which... because I know this story, but for the life of me, I won't even pretend to remember the actual case. I know the story, but I cannot remember the name of the case. Do you know, remember what?
Well, yeah, this was one of the investigators in my UFO cryptid group that I'm a part of. His mother had seen a green gray man hanging on the corner of the room of the hallway. Like Spider-Man. That's how she described it, like Spider-Man.
Yeah.
The one on the right is the investigator sketch. I then took that and on the left and applied my 4 years of college training to it and put it on there as if, you know, on how best I can represent it. And she described the man as green. She also described him surrounded in sparkles, like sort of. And then when she reacted to it, suddenly seeing something there, it immediately disappeared. So I can imagine the sparkles being like I liken it to like if you ever get punched in the face or you stand up too fast or you take a shit too hard.
Yeah.
you see sparkles, you see glitter. In your vision. And that's sort of what I would liken those sparkles to. So I did best to represent that. And it was just sort of like just a green, you know, gray looking man, you know, just up there, just stuck to the walls, which I found odd.
100%. I mean, first of all, I mean, the encounter in and of itself, that's why I remember this, because you told it on Joe and Ben's show. I was trying to remember. I was racking my brain. I'm like, I know this story. And it's because you talked about it on there. The sparkles, that's interesting, because I know that most of the time they said this one are blood pressure. If your blood pressure gets too high, that you're actually seeing the I can't remember what the term is. The
capillaries.
Thank you.
Yeah, so capillaries in your eyes popping or some shit.
I wonder if her adrenaline just kicked into such overdrive that she was actually, you know, I'm not, and again, I'm just throwing out an idea, but I wonder if that's what she was seeing in that moment with that. So, but no, it's, I mean, both of them are great, but I definitely think the left one there gave quite the artistic touch to it. So, are you okay with me sharing the next one?
Yeah, go ahead. Share them all.
So we got this one right here.
This is an account from Shannon LeBrow of Into the Fray. She was running through, when she was 15 years old, she RV'd with her cousins or what have you on one of her relatives' land, and he had mesquite trees. And when she was RVing through the mesquite trees, she saw a group of 4 or 5 shadow people running through the mesquite trees at a distance. And they were running through them and passing through all the trees. It's like they weren't running around the trees or through the trees, like darting through them. They were running through, literally through the trees at a sort of, you know, breakneck pace, you know, just pumping their arms, running as hard as they could, you know, just through these trees. And she sort of saw that at a distance, that that was her encounter, and she had best relayed it.
Wow. You know what's interesting about that, about the whole just passing through the trees? That makes me think of two things that just instantly pop in my head. One is that either if some of these, this a phenomenon or whatever people experience is some sort of a higher dimensional or just a different dimensional operation than what we operate in, it would appear as they're defying our laws of physics. And the second line would be if we're going just straight paranormal, where people have had instances where they're taking a picture of a ghost, right? And they said that it seemed like the ghosts were interacting with them. Well, then we've had instances when that's happening where back in the day, you go back and you look it up, and 100 years ago, people, or say 200 years ago, they had instances where they said they were seeing apparitions that had flashing lights in their hands. And it's almost like you're wondering, are these things seeing each other just at different times? You know, like maybe those trees where they're running, just running through the trees didn't exist. If they were some sort of in the past experience that somehow is appearing. I know that's really woo-woo. That's really out there. I get it. But
yeah, some sort of two-way time slip or yeah. dimensional time slip type of thing. Yeah, because I mean, as far as the olden stories of people, of them seeing stuff and like people in like what I guess we would describe as futuristic attire, which to us would be modern. Mm-hmm. As far as those, I haven't heard much of those. So that's something that I would have to look into or talk to someone about that. Yeah. But as far as, you know, because with all our ghost accounts, there have been a few stories where people see the ghost and then the ghost see them and then the ghost dart off.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, because they get scared, they get startled. And I think there was one account where a woman, she saw the ghost, it ran off, and then it actually peeked around the corner to see if she was still there, you know, before, wow. you know, disappearing, you know, and I kind of get that. That is a rather, you know, it is a rather strange thing. It's completely out there.
There was a lady on another podcast. I think the podcast is called The Confessionals. And she was talking about, she was doing, I forget what the term is called, but it's a phenomenon where you just sit down in the room and you kind of subscribe or you scribe. You listen to, like, you record a blank tape and then later you'll play it back and you hear things or whatever. And she was doing this and she was writing. And what she got on the recording basically was what she thought was a ghost, and they cleared it up as much as they could. But what blew their minds was in the recording, the voice, an older man, said, "They're here, the spirits are in the room." And then the little girl said, "Can I come? I want to be able to hear the spirits." So what she interpreted that as is in their reality, whatever was going on, she was the ghost in their reality. And that's again, because it's way above my understanding with all of it, I don't know, but I find it fascinating to I truly do kind of subscribe to the idea. I don't know where you're at with your position on this, but time to maybe not being as linear as we think it is.
Yeah, that sort of like dimensional slip of whatever or mm-hmm. what have you. I think that's sort of a thing. And I also think that could be where our aliens come from. Yeah. Because I've noticed an escalation in the lore I bring this up every single time is that, you know, I've been studying alien lore for quite some time. I've been reading about it since I was a little kid. And the thing is that before aliens, people would always see the aliens, you know, getting in and out of the saucer, or they would see them in the saucer. Then they would see them, you know, walking about the forest, and then they would see them peeking into the windows, and then they would see them, you know, opening the windows, crawling in through the windows. Then they would see them, you know, peeking in through the door and then crawling in through the door. And now it's reached the point that sometimes they see them phasing in through the wall. And now they're just appearing at people's bedsides, at the foot of their beds and such and such. So there's this steady escalation, which makes me, you know, wonder, examining that, if we're taking everything at face value, you know, is the aliens, is their technology improving? Are they like getting better? It's like, oh, thank God we can just pop in and phase through.
Yeah.
I don't have to crawl in through the damn windows anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, because sometimes these windows would be like two stories up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when they're crawling through, there's like six or seven on the other side, you know, just propping each other on each other's shoulders saying, you know, get in there, Marvin.
Good luck.
And it's the thing is that with that, you know, but then I also have to ask a question. Have they always been popping in, just popping in near the bedside, and the people, were they just saying, oh, they, or maybe they were peering in through the windows and stuff like that. And that was just crawling through the windows or crawling through the doors was just a way for them to fill in the details to explain how they got into the room, because they really don't know. Because I've had sleep paralysis episodes where I've had, you know, my sleep paralysis demons coming through the doors and stuff like that. And I can totally understand the chilling experience. Like, well, how could this happen? How do I explain this type of thing? And putting them in that spot.
Yeah. No, I agree. Like you said, it might have just been a case where, like you said, you just filled in the blanks. Because if you just told people, depending on the time and the era and where you were at, they just appeared in front of me. You sound like a crazy person versus, well, they crawled through the window. For whatever reason, mm-hmm. that little detail helped solidify it a little more for those listening. But let me flip to the next one here. So...
yeah, this is sort of a dumpy looking goblin type of thing.
Yeah.
This was from a man who when he was a child, he had seen a sort of Yoda-esque type goblin with you know, this sort of patchy skin, this sort of pooch belly, covering himself, the teeth like needles. It had this sort of grin, and it had these three fingers and these sort of slitted eyeballs. And as he could best describe it, it you know, it looked at him, smiled, and then waved at him. And he was petrified. So he took his stuffed alligator, his stuffed crocodile, and threw it at the creature, and it disappeared. And it wasn't until he was later, as an adult, that his mother was able to confirm his account. Because really? Around the time she had felt some sort of creepy happening in the home that sort of validated his feelings and stuff like that, and let him know that, well, he wasn't alone in these sort of accounts and stuff like that. And it's a rather, you know, it's just a rather account where you see something otherworldly, and it's like it's in the corner of the room. But with this one, it sort of interacted with him in a sense that he felt it was trying to tempt him type of thing. It was sort of trying to gain his trust or whatever.
Yeah. The old stories of the Fae, right? Where they're all the promises that never get fulfilled. So, but how long does something like this, I meant to ask you about the last one in particular, like say with this one, how long does that take you to draw something like this, or what's your process, I guess?
I guess it's probably like a sketch. It'd probably take about like maybe 4 or 5 hours, you know, just steadily working on it.
That's amazing. I would never. I struggle to make a solid stick figure to this day. I have the imaginations there, right? But there's just there's no skill in bringing it to life, you know. Now this one, the last one here, I think is obviously, in my opinion, probably the most creepy of the ones that you have on here, but also fascinating.
Yeah, that was just a rendering of what I've heard of accounts of the rake, which I think is a lot of, dare we say, in my opinion, I think the rake is one of those creatures where we sort of, I guess I would have to say is that it sort of came from pop culture into our world, like the Slenderman. Where, and I do believe that maybe the same could be said for the Dogman as well.
Yeah,
I'm going to send you one more. So
no problem. I don't know why that went. I popped off for a second. They're like, kicked me off. Yeah, this is. I mean, if you look at this idea, like you're saying, I wonder too. Every once in a while, because it does come up when we think about the idea of. Oh, what's the term for this? Basically, do we as human beings have the ability to slowly start either A, giving things energy to manifest, or B, just through our, I guess, like a hysteria in some sense, you could say, if we're trying to critically evaluate it, you know,
I would probably say is something that with not. this stuff was sort of like always there. And because a lot of the things that we see are like archetypes. They're like the dog man is this sort of he's a rather sort of, did you freeze?
Yeah, it froze me. All right, am I back now for you?
Yeah.
Okay. I noticed it froze up for a second, but yeah, go ahead. You were saying archetypes, I believe.
Yeah, we do have these sort of archetypes where there's the little green men, and could they be they leprechauns or Martians. And there's sort of always a hairy something in the woods, be it the wild man, which is the sort of id of ourselves, you know, the wild sort of ourselves that left the woods, or be it the Bigfoot. And there's always the weird shadowy creature, be it the shadow people, the hat man, what have yous, and other type of things that are sort of out to, you know, just in the corner recesses of our psyche. And sometimes, you know, this stuff is just repackaged and regurgitated as whatever new pop culture thing. Now, I do believe that the rake is sort of, I understand that there is a thing out there called the tulpa, and they said that it could be a representative of a sort of thought form energy. But I also think it could be that people are seeing something out there and they don't know what it is, and it's a fleeting glance. So I believe that in some accounts they attributed it to a rake. I don't want to put all my eggs in the basket that there are, you know, that's what it is. And yes, I'm going to have people that swear up and down, it's what I saw. I know what I saw. And I get it. You're bigger than I am, so you're right, type of thing. And it's this sort of thing of where, you know, I can see where we sort of have this sort of thing of we want to put labels on stuff. And I get that. I totally get that. I love that. I love labeling shit and categorizing stuff and putting it in its little slots and all this and that. But as far as the rake, I have to be a bit, you know, a bit extra critical on the sense that, you know, it's something that was sort of could have been a sleep paralysis demon likened to the gray lady or the gnome or goblin that would sit on people's chest. And now people are probably attributing it to sightings in the woods. And I think that there's probably some a little bit of misconjecture or a bit of maybe crossover there or something or other. I don't know what to make of it, but I do believe that what happened is cultural pollution crossed over into our paranormal stuff. And whenever I hear anyone give a rake account, I try to listen a little bit more closely because my inner scrutiny is sort of, you know, something in there triggers my inner skeptic so much that I do, you know, sort of want to make something of it. You know, I got to hear it out and type of thing, because it's one thing. It's one of those, this isn't something that is usually out in the woods that we hear of, as far as I know.
Yeah, no, not at all. It's not like you're saying, it's not the Bigfoot or Dogman encounters. It's a little more unique and terrifying in my opinion.
Or it could be like, maybe this is like everyone likens to the Wendigo, or perhaps there's always a pale figure, a sort of a pale figure that represents a sort of ghostly essence that, again, is out in the wilds as far as we see it.
I have to say, though, this is probably my favorite picture. I've never seen that. Maybe I missed it. Have you shared this on Facebook before? Because if you did, I 100% missed this one.
Yeah. I've tagged a couple of people. I think I tagged Ryan Sprague in it one time. Because he always goes on about how, you know, awesome J. Allen Hynek is. And I'm like, this is pretty cool. So I did this as a joke, where I made like the J. Allen Hynek UFO Daddy gym shirts, because you always see those workout shirts. And I'll probably put this on a t-shirt sometime in the future, where I have like J. Allen Hynek as a sort of, you know, muscular creature. And he's sort of like, you know, these aliens are trying to take him down, but they can't because he's too strong. He's too buff.
I would 100% buy that shirt. Yeah.
he went Super Saiyan type of thing. Nice. And it's the thing is that, you know, I thought about maybe doing a series, maybe having one with like a Stanton Friedman, you know, with big old muscles and stuff like that, lifting groceries and stuff like that. since that was his big saying during the Betty and Barney Hill, like, that's not our trip to the grocery store. Type of thing, which is often made fun of, which is the butt of the jokes that he's attributed to.
Yeah.
And, you know, and maybe like doing like a couple of tribute, you know, working out muscle stuff to past staples of the paranormal community and stuff like that. You know, that's one of those, I'll get to it when I have time, but it's sort of a like everything else, you know, when time. The time presents itself type of thing.
Have you done a rendition of, of Also One. I don't know if you remember this alien. It happened with, I'm drawing a blank right now. Hang on a second. I will look his name up. But the alien he referred to was called Also One. The Carl Higdon abduction. That's what it was called. I don't know if you've ever looked up the Carl Higdon abduction.
Refresh my memory.
He was out moose hunting, or he was going to hunt moose. He was a logger. Fires the bullet, and it like stops in midair. This creature or entity appears in front of him, and time has stopped. The bullet hits the ground. He picks the bullet up. He puts it in his pocket, and then it's basically this creature takes him on a trip. I mean, the craft was very small. Like it looked like a four foot by 5 foot kind of frame. And somehow it shrunk him and like six other moose down, and they take him to the planet. And it's a really big one that seemed to really redo a rendition, but it's like a very unknown story in some weird ways. Like it's he was one of the few ones that had evidence at the end, where if you're going to critically evaluate things, we did an episode, I think it was episode 54 on it, but he still had that bullet that ended up going to forensics at the end of the day. And they said there was no way that they could replicate, because the bullet itself didn't hit in much, you know, like if we shot something, right, a bullet would hit, twist and mushroom out.
Yeah.
But in this instance, the bullet, they said it looked like it had imploded and been ripped from the inside. It was as if they said it was like the bullet got turned inside out, like taking your clothes off, flipping it around. That's how it looked. It was very strange. But yeah, the Also One character, if you get a chance, maybe look it up. That might be a fun one for you to.
Yeah. You're going to have to like send me a link to
it. I will. It's such a crazy, bizarre looking creature. Like it's not an alien. Like it has like a hook for an arm on one side. It has like straw hair. Like it's the most bizarre looking thing. It has like no chin.
I think I might have heard of it, but yeah, the more obscene and strange looking stuff. Yeah, that stuff really, I love that stuff. I love the more obscene looking. I think in Japan, they have a few alien encounters where they have some strange looking creatures. And I do wonder if our culture sort of, you know, if whatever our culture is sort of masks these things. I think one of the theories, I think this was proposed by Timothy Renner and Joshua Cutchin, is that sort of these entities, when they enter our reality, they're going based on, they have like a select skin, like when you're like loading up a video game, that the skins that they have access to are, you know, predetermined by our culture. And then they just step into one of those and then go about and do their business. That's how they're rendered. It's not so much that that's what they are. That's just how we see them, because that's how our reality, when we perceive them, renders them as such.
Yeah. Samantha Mowat hit on that when she was on the show with the UFO Garage. But she talked about that, how when entities appear to people, that they choose the way that they're going to be presented, or have the ability to choose the way they're going to be presented to make you more comfortable. Or maybe some are trying to intimidate you, whatever it might be. But generally speaking, that's what she was saying, is that their energy is not what you're seeing. What you're seeing is just something they're just using to be here. And I've always found that very interesting, because like you said, that's why I've always gotten so, like, I don't get hung up when somebody says they've seen a gray, or they've seen, you know, a lizard person or a reptilian. Like, people get really hung up, well, I've never seen that, so I can't be real. It's like, come on, man, we're all talking. You're all sitting here talking about aliens at the end of the day. Like, I do get that you probably should have a little bit, but I don't know, that's a cross to die on, or the hill to die on, as it were.
I find the grays fascinating. And and what I find fascinating also is, if you dig deeper into the lore, nearly every single subsect has their own starter kit of grays. They have their own brand of grays, like the cola and the Pepsi grays. You know, you'll have the reptilians, they have their brand of grays that reflect them. There are other ones who have the sort of grays. It's sort of like there's some universal starter kit that you buy, and then you grow your own grays, and then they do your stuff for you. And I can see where, because every single alien subsect, you know, they have their own, but they have their own flavor.
Yeah. And that's where it seems like, too, you know, the idea that I've always subscribed to, the idea that, okay, let's just, without getting into the whole dimensional stuff, and that we're all just smashed on top of each other and already all here. Let's say that the universe is spread out the way that we're being told and everything. Then if that's the case, more than likely, whatever encounters its first encounter from us going somewhere, whatever is there is not actually us. It's able to withstand whatever element to be there. And more than likely, I mean, it may have some, like, look what's out there right now, the rovers and stuff. Those characteristics have nothing to do with what a human looks like. But if there is something there, that's what they're seeing. You know, it has zero to do with what we even look like until we get to that. You know, AI is really taking off in the robotics aspect of everything. It's really just leaps and bounds every day. So I think we're going to get there before the century's out. I think it'll be even faster than that. But
yeah. And another misconception is the rovers, they're not the size of a shoebox. They're the size of a good, like, Mack truck. Those things are freaking huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, we see that because we're always seeing it from a distance. It looks teeny tiny. It's not a shoebox. Those things are gigantic.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I tell you what, brother, this has been a great time. If there's anything else you want to plug or anything that you want to let people know about, I've had a great time. I'd love, if you're open to it, by the way, I was going to tell you, I'd love to have you back on if we ever do a panel, because one of my things is, especially with my guy not always being able to make it, I mean this the most positive way I can. I love your perspective on making somebody defend their argument or bringing that other perspective. So if you're ever open to when we have a panel on, when we have somebody who's going to bring something up, I like to have that other person there to challenge it. And I'm not always the best person for that. I
understand what you're saying. You know, because when you challenge stuff, it's not so much, you know, can this stand up? It's also, I want to know more about it. So in order to understand it, I need to know more how it works. And that's where those questions come in. It's to get a better understanding as well. Mm-hmm. Not just trying to shoot stuff down. It's not always to try to shoot stuff down. Sometimes it's just to get a more clear understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, if you're ever up for it, like I said, I don't know if it would. I might have froze for a second. If we ever get something where we can do whatever it might be, whatever the panel is, bring in, you know, where you've given your perspective, they've given theirs, and then we have an episode where both parties come together and kind of debate it. I would love to do that one time, because I do think
that's fine.
People understanding having that you can have a healthy debate and walk away at the end of the day. It's okay. You really can. You're able to do it. It's just things might get heated, and that's fine. People defend their position. But man, we can't be so afraid to just, you know, challenge somebody else here and there. And one last thing I was going to ask you, and maybe I'll talk to you about it. Maybe stick around after I end the broadcast. I'll talk to you about it after we end here. So is there anything else you want to let people know about and where they can find
me? I'm good. Just look me up, Conspire Theory on your apps and Google stores and all that stuff. Wherever you find podcasts, I'll be there. And, also hit me up on Instagram at Conspire Theory. Use underscores between the letters. I mean, between the words. And you'll find most of my artwork on there. And my latest episode is out now. I interview Lisa O'Hara. We have a talk. I find a way to bring up the cat bus, the Miyazaki cat bus, during her conversation, because she talked about kitty spiders. Yeah. And it's like, you mean a cat bus? They're trying to build a cat bus? Part cat, part spider, all bus. The cat bus. There you go. And that was a fun conversation with her. She is a gem. And I have a back catalog of lots of other, you know, things and people that I talk to and other such things like that. So it's a good, fun stuff. I try to discuss other topics, not just paranormal stuff. I also get into comic books and movies. I also talk with writers and stuff like that and other such folks. You know, it's a lot of... I'm really selective of who I talk to, but also I try to find, you know, whoever it is that I can nail down that will, you know, sit and talk with me about whatever topics out there. Yeah. Also have those as well.
Absolutely. Well, as always, folks, as we always end the show saying, we'd like to ask you to stay curious and keep it weird.